I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Drexel University and Brandywine Realty Trust have big plans for West Philadelphia, a multi-billion dollar project called Schuylkill Yards to transform 14 acres around 30th Street Station from the river to the Drexel campus. Once built, it will include offices, retail and open space, a hotel, laboratories. Drexel President John Fry said inclusion is at the heart of the project, calling it inclusive development. He was referring to the residents living in nearby Mantua and Powelton Village. They're part of a Promise Zone, a federal program to help low-income neighborhoods. Today on Radio Times, is development without displacement possible? And we have four guests who have joined us, three of whom are with us here in our Philadelphia studio. Michael Thorpe is executive director of the Mount Vernon Manor CDC in West Philadelphia. Michael, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Lucy Kerman. She's Vice Provost for University and Community Partnerships for Drexel University. Lucy Kerman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. Also with us is Jim Saxa. He's a reporter for Plan Philly. That's a project at WHYY. Jim, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here, Marty.
And our fourth guest joining us by Skype is Jacqueline Huang, and she's a postdoctoral research fellow in the Office of Population Research at Princeton University. And she's done a lot of research about how neighborhoods are changed sometimes by things like gentrification, has looked at neighborhoods here in Philadelphia. And Jacqueline Huang, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Lucy, let me begin with you. Let's go forward 20 years. What is the vision? What's the plan about what this would look like 2 decades from now?
20 years from now, we can be standing at 30th Street Station. You look out going west, and instead of seeing fallow parking lots, you'll see a beautiful square, you'll see new buildings, you'll see activity, you'll see green, and you'll also see jobs. And I think one of the critical things that we think about is how to make sure those jobs are available to everybody. But it should be lively, it should be exciting, it should be welcoming, and a huge change from what we have now.
And what kind of jobs are you talking about?
There's going to be every kind of jobs. I mean, there are going to be jobs in the businesses that are operating there. There'll be jobs in the retail stores. But there are also going to be business opportunities for local vendors who will be selling goods and services to the tenants in the buildings. We're aware of all the kinds of jobs that are there, and we're thinking now about how we make them accessible and visible to local residents.
Mike, what's your hope in 20 years that this project, what will it look like?
So In 20 years, I hope that, just like Ms. Kerman just described, that it is inclusive and takes in consideration and intentional around including the neighborhoods that it will impact. The idea is a reflection of some of the same concerns that the people in the community of Mantua have expressed, an opportunity to rise and to be pulled up or to have an opportunity to take care of their families and have jobs and have opportunities and have careers, and having a partnership with an enormous university like mm-hmm. Drexel University that has the vision to work in concert with their neighbors and really give value to the concerns and the vision of the neighborhood as well as achieving their objectives. It's an opportunity and a model that is exciting.
Well, let me pick up on something, and to you, Jim, and this is actually quoting from something that John Fry and Jerry Sweeney actually had in the Philadelphia Inquirer, and I'll just quote a couple of sentences here. So the big question for the future would seem to be, can creative commercial development be a catalyst for sustainable social progress? We'd like to answer that question with an emphatic yes. How do you see this project?
I see this as an exciting project. I like what they're saying. I'm skeptical. I think that these are monumental challenges that they're facing. Market forces are going to be against them in terms of their goals for inclusion. They've mentioned, I don't think they've actually outlined a full vision. They have a bunch of goals, but not a strategy to get there yet. And some of the things that they brought up, I think, will increase the cost on tenants and make some of the developments that they want to make slightly less competitive in the marketplace. And so that's going to be difficult to do. That being said, if they pull it off, they should
It'll be a model, will it not?
It'll be a model, and we should start building statues to them.
But you're skeptical that it's possible? I mean, this, and I'm assuming to you, Lucy, I mean, this is, you don't want to be losing money on this. So there's, the goal is at least broadly speaking, looking at all the hotels and retail and residential, mm-hmm. I'm assuming there's profit in there. The question is, how does that get shared?
So I don't think it's a contradiction to say that you can invest in an area that will bring the kind of investment, in fact, that Philadelphia needs. We need new jobs. We need taxpaying jobs. We need new retail. The 30th Street Station is the third busiest train station in the entire country. We need that to be livelier. It doesn't mean that it can't be fair. It doesn't mean that it's not possible to bring jobs in. It may not be that the tenant rates are going to be affordable by the local community. Mm-hmm. But it does mean that there will be access to the jobs, there'll be pipelines of jobs to there, that education can be improved so that children can eventually see themselves as the entrepreneurs in those businesses.
So the focus is large, at least for the community, on jobs, job development?
Jobs, job development, access to the space, beautiful public space that people will feel welcome in, retail that will benefit everybody. But I think economic opportunity is really critical, and thinking about not just operational jobs there or construction jobs and building the site, but also recognizing that each of the businesses in those buildings is going to have to buy things. They're going to have to buy business cards. They're going to have to buy promotional items. Where do those businesses develop? Why can't they be West Philadelphia businesses that hire local residents?
I mean, that's a question rather than a statement.
Well, it's
right?
a commitment.
It's a commitment.
It's our commitment.
And so I like that commitment.
Go ahead,
because, to your point, there is a degree of skepticism. But I think that the approach that is being demonstrated and that what the community is expecting right now and looking forward to is that we have an opportunity to be at the table to talk about how there is inclusion and the creation of it. The approach, you mentioned the work that we have done mm-hmm. with gaining the Promise Zone designation. The approach that I feel that is different, it was a bottom-up approach as opposed to a top-down. The federal government made the investment in the community that said that the community has clearly created a vision of what they would like to do. It's a work in progress. And so the efforts by President Fry and Mr. Sweeney to publicly say, we want to make sure we're intentional to be inclusive in what we're doing and how we impact our neighbors at Mantua, Powhatan Village, Belmont. It's a different model. We don't want it to just be lip service. We would like to sit down and have a talk, but we're already having those tables now. We're talking about how we work on making investments in our schools. The McMichael School, Drexel University has a relationship with McMichael School. We talk about opportunities for jobs. One of the things as I was preparing, I know I'm long-winded, but preparing for this interview is that there is a basic hope that everybody has for their family. They just want to do better.
Sure.
This is an opportunity if we work in concert together to say, let me wake up and I have a hope. I can go to work. I can take care of my children. I can provide wonderful housing. There's an opportunity to attend a school that helps you to be prepared in life. And the jobs that may be creative in this innovation district, well, I have an opportunity to work here and take care of my family.
So, I know you want to say something, Lucy. Go ahead, and then Jacqueline will get you in
absolutely.
On the conversation.
No, I was just going to respond to Jim. I mean, one of the reasons there isn't an articulated plan is that it has to be created with our partners. We haven't sat down with Mike, the other CDCs, the civic associations, our nonprofit partners to develop the plan. So we have broad goals that are based on what Drexel itself is doing around inclusion. And we want to have our partners, Brandywine, and our community partners all at the same table. We'll develop the plan together, mm-hmm. and we'll understand how it needs to be shaped based on community input.
Jacqueline, let me get you in on the conversation. You've heard from all three of our guests here. And in many ways, it is a development project, also, I guess, a kind of social experiment. Based on the kind of research that you've done, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think this sounds like a great plan. These neighborhoods do have been neglected for long periods of time and need the investment. My one concern is when it comes to inclusion, how you're thinking about housing. So as this neighborhood develops, as this area develops, then areas around it are going to become more attractive. And so how are you thinking about whether or not the plans are good for the place, but not necessarily the people that are there if they experience displacement as a result of this?
And Jack, is that sort of at the heart of some of the concerns that perhaps you and other people have, which is housing, whether people can afford to live in a neighborhood next to an ambitious project like this?
Yes. Because, you know, when there's a large scale investment like this, the neighborhood becomes more attractive, the rents and housing values go up. And so the big question on whether or not gentrification is good for neighborhoods that have been low income, long disinvested for long periods of time, is whether or not the people that should benefit from the investment are able to stay.
Jim, you want to add something? I know all three of you do here, but go ahead, Jim.
And I think that's a great point. The plans such that they presented so far do not include any affordable housing, nor that I really would expect it, because this is, you know, not that sort of neighborhood that they want to build. It's, you know, supposed to be an innovation district, what have you. But in the nearby areas in Mantua today, you know, I was out there the other day, and there's some development already happening, and that development is aimed at student housing. You're seeing old residents already, I think. You know, there's some displacement already starting to happen. Just anecdotally, I looked on Zillow the other day and looked at housing prices, and they've gone up dramatically in the last couple of years already. I'm sure Mike can talk more about that. But that's the other half of it. I think all the stuff they're saying about economic inclusion and local procurement is great for the residents today if they can be there or stay there for the next 5 years when that starts happening.
Mike, we're almost about a minute before our first break here, but go ahead. I want to hear from you.
So I agree. That's the description of what just happens with the values of in the community, the property's values, is a description of gentrification, right? The question is, can residents or can people in the community that desire to stay in the community still stay there? And so there are other pressures that are happening in the community. One is an initiative that we're working in concert with the Civic Association, the remapping of Mantua. Right now, presently, all of the parcels for speculators that are developing properties in Mantua, it's student housing. And so understanding that by remapping, by making the speculators or developers accountable to the community to kind of talk about what you plan to build and who it's built for is an important piece. We're working with our local politicians to make sure that we're having the conversation to discuss how we can make sure that people get to stay in place. Mount Vernon Manor, as Ms. Lucy and I talked, we are affordable housing providers. We are underway with the renovation of 48 wonderful affordable housing units that create this opportunity to allow people to stay in place. I'm sorry. I hear the music.
He's hearing the music, and right. Which means that we have to take a very short break, and we will get back to our conversation talking about a very specific project here in Philadelphia involving Drexel University and its neighbors. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Let me just recap here. Big changes are coming to West Philadelphia. Drexel University announced an ambitious multi-billion dollar 14-acre project called Schuylkill Yards. It will include corporate offices and educational facilities, residential, retail, open space. The project also has a social mission to help the low-income neighborhoods that will border the yards. And again, with us, Lucy Kerman, Drexel Vice Provost for University and Community Partnerships, Michael Thorpe, the Executive Director of the Mount Vernon Manor CDC, Plan Philly reporter Jim Saxa, and Jacqueline Huang. She's a postdoctoral research fellow at Princeton University who has studied the impact of gentrification on communities, including here in Philadelphia. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Jacqueline, let me go back to you, and I know that you've done some research looking specifically at some Philadelphia neighborhoods from 2002 to 2014, looking at
the rate of gentrification. What is the sort of main takeaway when there is some kind of a project to upgrade a neighborhood? If I can put it this way, winners, losers, what did you find?
Yes. So in that study, we were tracking where people moved to and what rate they moved to in neighborhoods that were gentrifying versus those that were not gentrifying. And so in general, we don't find that people move, and specifically we're looking at credit scores, so people with lower credit scores, we don't find that they move at a higher rate than, that people in gentrifying neighborhoods don't move at a higher rate than those in non-gentrifying neighborhoods. But when we break it down and look at neighborhoods that gentrify rapidly or have been gentrifying for a long time, we do find that they're more likely to move more in gentrifying neighborhoods. And we also tracked where they're moving to. And so what we do find are that in these neighborhoods, residents with lower credit scores who generally are less advantaged end up in worse quality neighborhoods. So we're finding that these residents move to other neighborhoods within the city, and these neighborhoods are generally poorer, have more disadvantage. And so what we're seeing is that even though they're not moving at higher rates, and this is because people do things to try to stay in the neighborhood. You know, people do like the benefits that come with gentrification. And so it takes a long time. Some people, you know, have more people living in their house so that they can pay the rent and do things to try to stay there. But eventually when they do move, they end up in worse neighborhoods. And so this is a form of displacement that we see. And at the same time, we also find that in neighborhoods that are gentrifying, the less advantaged residents are less likely to move in over time. So what this means is that there's less affordable housing in these neighborhoods as these neighborhoods continue to gentrify.
I wanted to just a quick question back to you, Jacqueline. As we know, Philadelphia has a lot of empty lots, a lot of vacant buildings. Has that affected gentrification or even this problem of displacement?
Yeah, I think that contributes to our why we don't necessarily see faster rates of moving. A lot of the gentrification does happen in vacant housing, and it's new construction, new developments. So you're not necessarily directly displacing a resident that was living there because no one had been living there. And I think that's why we see that there aren't necessarily faster rates of people moving. But over time, these neighborhoods go up in value and eventually start displacing the residents that were living there. And so while we might not see a faster rate, the people that do end up moving end up in worse neighborhoods. It's not a choice that they're moving to the suburbs or better neighborhoods.
Sure. Lucy, let me give you actually all of you a chance to respond to that. So looking at this project, how do you prevent something like that from happening where the most vulnerable people end up being the ones that are going to move out and move out perhaps to an even lesser neighborhood?
So Drexel and our partners, whether it's Mount Vernon Manor or the local civics or PEC, CDC, or Philadelphia LISC, we've actually been studying what's going on in these neighborhoods for over 4 years. We're very aware of the changes happening. They're happening in West Philadelphia at a lower rate than they're happening in Center City, but they're still happening. And what we've been looking at is what are the tools that we have to prevent displacement? And it turns out that there actually are tools. And we've been getting our hands around, you know, is the threat to displacement coming because your taxes have increased? Are they coming because your house is falling out around you? Are they coming because your rent has increased? If we stop talking about sort of gentrification in a blanket way and start understanding the pressures around displacement and the tools that we have that are available. So together, our partnership has created what's called a Fair Future, which outlines what the tools are that we have to prevent the kind of displacement that I think all of us are concerned about. And I think Mike's work with the Mount Vernon Manor Apartments is a really critical piece of that. Let's take the affordable housing, the affordable rental, let's improve it. We've been working on a housing preservation initiative with partners Rebuilding Together and Habitat for Humanity to shore up the houses of longtime homeowners. Let's think about what the actual problems are and then begin to address them. But we've been thinking about this for years.
Jim, you want to jump in on this at all?
Just to say that the work that they're doing there is excellent, and it's especially compared to the other form of affordable housing that you see in Philadelphia, which is to try to build new homes out of whole cloth. And the costs there tend to be exorbitant. There's over the top. Rebuilding existing housing stock is a much more effective and cost-efficient process.
We got an email from Stephanie Selden. Michael, I know you know her. She's the executive director of Rebuilding Together Philadelphia, described as a nonprofit that renovates the homes of low-income homeowners with volunteer resources. Her question is, will the Schuylkill Yards project specifically address the housing condition of existing long-term homeowners? And she described many low-income homeowners living in what she describes as really terrible conditions. Pest infestations, non-working appliances, bathrooms that lack plumbing. I mean, what I hear from this project is that it's not designed to necessarily improve the housing in West Philadelphia or Mantua or even parts of Powelton. It's to do this, and hopefully that will create a better situation for the people living nearby.
So, again, as a reflection of the way that I think, I'm a positive thinker, I think that this presents a unique opportunity to have a discussion with our partners at the table around how we are creative and innovative to address another problem that has come to the forefront of what's happening in these communities. While the Schuylkill Yards may not primarily focus on the development or the rehabilitation of existing homeowners presently, but by us having topic or discussions like this, or sitting at the table, mm-hmm. and then you have a partner that says, well, how can I really put my weight behind some of the issues and the pressures that are happening in my neighbor, in my neighbor's household, so to speak? I think it's a wonderful opportunity. And another point, another pressure that happens in communities that are being gentrified, we have to transition the way that we think, right? Some folks in the neighborhood may be under the impression that we're looking for a handout. That's not Mantua's position, right? We're looking for a hand up to say, you're our partner, right? What you do on the south side of Spring Garden Street will impact us on the north borders. So how do we intentionally sit down and talk about how we create opportunities for people to just enjoy life, right, and not get displaced? Some displacement will happen, but I like what the young lady, the researcher, was talking about. The numbers don't reflect how displacement is happening because you have such a large inventory of vacant parcels in communities like Mantua. But it does not dismiss the fact that it happens, because when you look at the rates of the taxes and seniors that are on a fixed income. Mm. But there's no question that they love to live in their community. I'm excited every day that I go to Mantua because that's where my history is, the preserving of it. And remembering as a child how we were poor. But someone had to remind me of that, because the neighborhood, through leadership like Young Great Society, Mr. Herman Rice, there was always something for us to do. There was an opportunity. So you didn't focus on, or I never focused on, the lack. There was always an opportunity that I looked up and I had hope. And so,
and that's the kind of thinking that you're also talking
absolutely.
About as well. Jim, let me go back to you. I mean, you know the city really well. There certainly have been parts of the city that have been, quote unquote, gentrified. I'm thinking about Kensington, Northern Liberties, mm-hmm. the most sort of obvious example. Are there lessons, are there takeaways from that that can be applied to this ambitious project, do you think?
I think there are, and I think the most geographically close one is one that I think they're learning the most from. Lucy, correct me if I'm wrong, you were at Penn before.
I was.
And so was your boss, John Fry. He was executive vice president at Penn for a long time. And under his time there, Penn did the quote-unquote gentrification of University City. They invested in a local school, Sadie Alexander School, did a lot of programs to encourage staff and faculty to buy homes in the area, really stabilized what was a unstable neighborhood. But with that came, with that gentrification came a large amount of displacement, and the African-American population in the surrounding area dropped over, less than a decade, 50%. That's a huge change as income rates and housing rates rose. To their credit, I think Drexel's thinking about that now, whereas Penn only started to think about it after the fact. They've learned that lesson. But yeah, it's happening across the city.
You want to add to that, Lucy?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that in the late 90s we've fully understood at Penn how the real estate market could take off because it was so flat. And the possibility of investment seemed so far off. I mean, it's absolutely true that the Penn Alexander School really increased the housing prices in that neighborhood. It's also important to note that Spruce Hill was never Mantua. The extent of poverty, the extent of need in Mantua is such that there's absolutely no way that a Drexel could think about its neighborhood without realizing that it has to establish a very deep partnership. So we're in a very different period. And I think the university, Drexel University, has been very focused on being proactive, understanding the threat of real estate change, reaching out to our partners to understand how we can work together, understanding what the values of that community are and the leadership of that community, and making sure that we're at their table helping to realize their goals.
Jacqueline, let me go back to you. And I'm thinking of the kind of redevelopment maybe in the 50s and 60s when the use of eminent domain, whole areas, whole neighborhoods were essentially bulldozed so that new construction could be built. This was not, you know, really across the country. Have those lessons been learned, do you think, when it comes to things like development and sustainable development?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still a rhetoric that's arguing that the gentrification of today is reflecting the new urban renewal, sort of reflecting what was happening in the 50s and 60s. So these same long disinvested communities are being infiltrated with new development. It's very refreshing to hear what Lucy and Michael are saying about how they're paying a lot of attention to displacement and trying to be as inclusive as possible. So I don't think this will be a case where, you know, just people are going to bulldoze Mantua, and, you know, as the new development takes off, they'll bulldoze into the adjacent neighborhoods. But I do, you know, I am worried that while they're talking about inclusionary housing, inclusionary development, that there's still this issue of housing. What's going to happen to the neighborhood 10 years from now in Mantua, Belmont? And are these improvements going to benefit the communities that need it the most?
Let me read a quote, a comment from our website from Beth. She says, sounds to me like the more of the same smoke and mirrors too often handed to neighborhoods like this. Your guest says that, yes, locals won't be able to afford the rents in the building proposed, but they'll get hired to work in those businesses, which means more West Philadelphians competing for low-wage, part-time, no-benefit jobs, for which, by the way, Drexel and Penn students will also apply. You describe yourself, Michael, as an optimist. I hear from Beth a great deal of skepticism about what we're talking about.
And so I think that based on Beth's experience, that she may have informed that opinion, I'm an optimist. Like you said, I believe just by virtue of the fact that we've been doing this work and being somewhat intimidated initially to be involved and have these discussions, but to see that it's yielding some kind of accountability that our partners are willing to accept around what will actually happen in these different communities. I can't foretell the future. I am just hopeful that the future that we're talking about as it impacts communities like Mantua and low-income folks, that there's an opportunity. We don't guarantee that by virtue of this development that your life will change, but there's an opportunity if you apply yourself and apply the opportunity to the betterment of your family. I just hope, yeah. I look at the glass in that view. And so
how do you look at the glass, Lucy?
So let me give you an example of how this is working, or at least how we're trying to make it work. The university opened in the fall a new residence in partnership with American Campus Communities, which has been building student housing around our campus. And there is a dining commons in that development called the Summit. Our food services partner, Sodexo Magic, entered into a contract with us where they were committed to hiring local residents to work in the dining commons. So last summer, we trained about I think we ended up with about 17 or 18 local residents who got the jobs in the summit to be part of that development. Those are, in fact, not low-wage, without-benefits jobs. They were trained for specific jobs. They've got jobs that have career pathways. And our commitment in working with our vendors, like Sodexo Magic, is they will hire locally. We worked with our partner, the West Philadelphia Skills Initiative, to do the training so they would be successful in their jobs. What we see and anticipate among the tenants in Schuylkill Yards is numbers and numbers of opportunities for real jobs where we can do the kind of job training that get people into pathways.
Jim, I'm curious what you're thinking.
I think the West Philadelphia Skills Initiative is a great program. I agree, though, with Beth that a lot of these jobs are going to be retail jobs, they're going to be janitorial jobs, and at best, you get a good employer like Drexel who will, you know, pay decent wages, but I don't know if that can be true.
That's all right.
So why do you assume that the professional jobs, the innovator jobs, the science jobs won't be for Mantra residents? I mean, our vision, and this comes from working 5 years with my partner here, Mike, is that the children in Mantua can grow up to get those innovation jobs. To assume that the only jobs that local residents will be eligible for is the lowest of the janitorial is to dismiss the commitment to improved education, to the mentoring, to the work that we're all doing. And this very much comes from the community, their commitment to McMichael. That's where we're really going with this.
Well, you know what? Hold on to that thought only because we have to take a very short break. But we will be all ears after this very short break. Talking about a project involving Drexel University, in fact, leading the charge. It's to be called Schuylkill Yards. And in about 20 years, after spending several billion dollars, this 14-acre project will include things like office spaces and educational facilities, residential, retail, open space. The project also has a social mission, and we are talking about what's part of this plan. You can call us at 1-888-477-9499. I see calls coming in. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Jacqueline Hong, and she's a postdoctoral research fellow in the Office of Population Research at Princeton University. She has studied the relationship between how neighborhoods change and the persistence of neighborhood inequality by race in the U.S., including here in Philadelphia, joining us by Skype. Jim Saxa, reporter for Plan Philly, that's a project of WHYY. Michael Thorpe, executive director of the Mount Vernon Manor CDC in West Philadelphia, and Lucy Kerman, Vice Provost for University and Community Partnerships at Drexel University. And all ears, all eyes on you, Jim Sachs. Lucy said, what makes you think we're just going to have janitorial jobs here?
And I don't think it'll be just janitorial jobs, but what Lucy's talking about is a 15, 20-year vision, right? And it starts with having better schools, and Drexel is partnering with local schools. And I think that's great.
The Science Leadership Academy, right? To
middle open, school.
Middle school to open.
Middle school. And, like, if we just play that out, though, we've seen this happen with the Sadie Alexander School. If you have a good school in a city that's starved for them, that makes that entire area much more desirable. And people will move there. Rents will eventually rise. And unless we have some focus on the affordability, those kids that we want to inspire, and I think we can and should inspire, and we should have, you know, working at these high-tech companies in 15 years after they graduate from Drexel and Penn, they're going to, as Jackie's research has shown, they'll end up in a worse neighborhood and go to the worst school. And that is, I think, the sort of crux of all of this, is that it's an incredibly difficult thing. I'm, as much as Michael is the optimist, I am a pessimist. I am so heartened, though, that you guys are talking the talk that you guys are talking and trying to really tackle this, because that hasn't, I don't think that's really happened before.
Let me just get Jacqueline on. I don't want you to feel like we're having a great conversation here, Jacqueline, and you're part of it. Talk to us about schools, though, the important role that schools play in some of these development or redevelopment projects.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, schools have been a big role, and especially in Philadelphia, in causing neighborhoods to be neglected for long periods of time. And I think with these school changes, there come neighborhood changes to the residents. So, Sadie Alexander, the neighborhood became a lot more attractive. People started moving in, and it's not necessarily serving the people that need good schools the most, and have had a school system that's failed them for many decades. And so I think what's happening is great with the Drexel development in terms of what's going to happen with the school around there. But what you're talking about with the fact that we can get these kids into these jobs in the future is great. But I think there's also an issue on whether or not the jobs are going to support the current household heads and whether or not the wages provided are going to allow them to live there and stay there. And just, you know, are we by saying that you're hiring locally, is that a commitment to not hiring Drexel and Penn students and to hiring locally as in the families that are there and have the most need to have jobs?
Michael, let me give you a chance. And we got some callers that want to join the conversation as well. Okay. Go ahead.
So I like what you said, and I think it's true that we have to be intentional. I use this word all the time about how we sit down and have conversations to take into consideration those variables that you pointed out, how our intent is to make sure it's inclusive and make sure that we are actually taking into consideration the jobs that we are training folks or the opportunities that we're talking about that are available, that not to exclude anybody. We want to create a welcoming environment community. I think just by virtue of us having these conversations, it's a different approach that's happening now, right? Mm-hmm. With a sense of accountability to come on national radio and be able to talk about a commitment to the McMichael School to make sure that the climate is welcoming so that kids can get an education, to be intentional to talk about how we plant seeds of hope in our young youth children as they go to school every day, how we're thinking about the jobs and the housing that needs to be developed to make sure that this community does not fall into the same trap that has happened in other communities throughout the country. So again, my optimism is that the mere fact that I grew up in Mantua all my life, I never had an opportunity to meet the president of the university. I never had an opportunity to meet the vice post of the university that comes out and says, okay, we want to know what's happening at our neighbors. So I think the big piece is that we don't want it to just be lip service. We want to have an accountability around our partners to how we can purposefully make sure that things are happening as Drexel rises, that there are other people in the communities that get pulled up by virtue of this particular development and others. Mm. And we become an example of how neighborhoods and large institution, anchor institutions can work together to create an equitable fair future for everybody.
I know you all want to say something. Let me get a couple of callers. And we've got Chris from, looks like Elkins Park, to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. 2 points. One about creating equity and how the university is going to do that in the neighborhood. One, you know, are they really putting their money where their mouth is? Will the university provide, say, full scholarship to kids who are in McMichael School right now as you're developing this plan to Drexel University? Because we know that's not cheap. Two, is there going to be a plan for mixed income housing around this development area? And I'll take my answer up here. Thank you.
Those are all good questions. I'm going to put those to you, Lucy.
So Drexel currently offers 50 full scholarships to the university for Philadelphia school graduates. So we already do that. And we are very focused on making sure that more children from Manta, West Palatine, Belmont, Mill Creek are eligible for Drexel. We work very closely with a dynamic new principal at McMichael, Brian Wallace, to make sure that the 7th and 8th graders at McMichael are aiming to the selective high schools, which will put them in a better position to go on to college. We do college access. We do a lot of mentoring programs. We're particularly focused in the middle school years because we recognize that one of the big challenges for kids to get into the high schools. So we already offer full financial aid for Philadelphia school kids, and that's a commitment that we've had for many years. As far as mixed-income housing at Schuylkill Yards itself, I don't think that's been determined.
Is it a good idea, though?
I think that it has to – so the development is Brandywine's. This does have to fit a financial model. It may very well be that you can find a way to make mixed-income housing possible there, but I think the issues about the future of the neighborhoods – are where sort of intentional mixed-income housing needs to be developed. And again, we're lucky in these neighborhoods to have CDCs like Mount Vernon Manor and People's Emergency Center. I think one of the things to remember about Penn Alexander, first of all, it is an economically diverse school still.
And this is the public school.
This is the public school in Spruce Hill that Penn created. It's not, in fact, only a middle-class school. There's a lot of income diversity. And secondly, Spruce Hill did not have a CDC that was focused on affordable housing. And around the Drexel campus, the reason that we think the schools have a chance of staying economically diverse is there are strong CDCs that are themselves developing affordable housing. So there is mixed-income housing built into these neighborhoods. Our commitment as a university is to make sure that stays there.
Jim, let me put to you, and I see a lot of very suspicious email comments, tweets on my right-hand side here. You described yourself as being skeptical. Is it because you know Philadelphia? You've seen this before? Is it just your nature to be skeptical? You are a journalist, after all.
Yeah. I'm skeptical not of the intentions or motives of Drexel or even Brandywine. I think those are pure. I believe them when they say that they want to do this without, to quote John Fry, disrupting the social fabric of the neighborhoods. I'm skeptical because I think doing that is such a tremendously large and difficult task. That doesn't mean you don't try. In fact, it means you absolutely have to try. But that is why. I think there's a lot of lingering distrust, though, of large institutions. You talked about in the 50s and 60s about using eminent domain. That happened with Drexel and Penn. They cleared out the black bottoms, as it was called back then, to create the University City Science Center, to create the University High School that was recently demolished and is going to be redeveloped as part of the Schuylkill Yards, or related to the Schuylkill Yards development.
The University City High School site is a different initiative, but they're
different.
In
it's happening at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
Let me get, looks like Mark from Fairhill to join us. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank
Mark.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm not the brightest bulb in the chandelier by any stretch of the imagination, but I have this feeling that what's past is prologue. I'm wondering if anyone is aware of any such program ever having succeeded in achieving the goals that many of your speakers have championed here. And if so, or if not, what makes them feel that this particular form of, shall we say, socioeconomic engineering is going to succeed where so many others have failed?
Well, Mark, that's actually a pretty smart question. Let me see what Jacqueline has to say, and I'm sure folks here in our studio want to talk about it as well. Is this a first? Has this been done before?
So I'd like to just comment. I think there are some successful models. I think Columbia University in New York has collectively worked together with the neighborhood to develop a community benefits agreement in which, again, you talk about the issues that are faced in the community and have a large institution accept accountability, and then you transition the way that you were moving to say, okay, let's include these types of considerations in what it is that we make our decisions on. And so I think that throughout the country there are examples of how universities and neighborhood community-based organizations work in concert together to address and tackle the issues that we're championing here in West Philadelphia.
Jacqueline, has this been tried before from your work looking at some of the projects similar to this across the country?
Yeah, so I think it depends on our goal. If our goal is to not have displacement and be able to have the benefits go to the original residents that were there, I don't think we know. Gentrification, to the extent that it's become in the last 10, 20 years, has just been ongoing, and displacement takes years to happen and to pick up, and there hasn't been the right data to be able to detect it to the extent. So I think we don't know, and I think this is great that we can try and look at that. And I just wanted to add to the point about mixed income housing. So I think an important thing to remember is it mixed income temporarily? Who's able to stay? So a lot of people, as I mentioned before, are able to stay when their neighborhoods gentrify through various ways that they, so for example, in Philadelphia, the property taxes haven't really increased very much until they did the assessments in the last couple years. So homeowners maybe have been able to stay. And so I think we need to think about that the poorest people are not able to stay and moving to these worse off neighborhoods. And so what does this mean for them?
Sure. Lucy, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I guess I'd say two things. The city of Philadelphia needs investment. We need a stronger tax base. We need to fill in all those vacant parking lots. Our school district depends on it. The future of our city depends on it. So we got to do it. What we have to figure out is how to make it fair. I don't think it makes sense for us to either hold back on investing in a way that the city needs or to simply throw up our hands and say it can't be done. I mean, if we're going to build the city, going to have a future for the school district, we're going to have to figure out how to be fair about it. And I think the commitment that we and our partners, with Mike sitting here, with the other CDCs, with the Civics, with Philadelphia LISC, with the others that we work with, we're sitting down at the table and having a genuine conversation for years now about what we can do, what the tools are, what the opportunities are, recognizing that we know people don't trust us as a university. We know that people are very suspicious of it. But I don't think there's an option. I don't think that the right thing to say is either we won't invest in Philly, sorry, or we will invest in Philly, but we don't care. So, you know, if you're looking for options, I think the option is we're going to invest, we're going to be intentional, we're going to try to be fair, we're going to work in partnership, we're going to see how it goes.
A minute before we have to say goodbye, Michael, I'm looking at my two screens here, a lot of skepticism. How are you going to change that thinking? You have 45 seconds to do that. Go ahead.
Well, I'll make it short. I'm hopeful. Each day that I wake up, I look at the hope that's happening in our community. I believe that one of the key components is clear communication. What we're talking about, what Ms. Lucy just described, is a table for us to sit down, for us to bring partners together, and to hold each other accountable to make sure at the end of the day that we don't say, oh, we're moving in this direction and we have a disregard for how it impacts people. People are the most valuable commodity that exists today. I mean, I always say this. If you believe you own something, let's have this conversation 100 years from now. If the Lord hasn't come back, we will not be here. Those things will be here. We're just stewards. And so why not remember how important it was for all of us to have an opportunity to change? I looked at your interview when you talked about your dad was an educator.
Yes, he was.
And so you were just a modest to reader. But I think you said your husband did a study and it provoked you to say, you know, to take a second look at yourself and just say, look, I can do these things. But the opportunity was there for you when you decided, Miss Marnie. And that's the hope that I have.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Michael Thorpe, Lucy Kerman, Jim Saxa, and Jacqueline Huang, thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the show. Lots of comments and calls that, frankly, we just could not get to. Do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.